Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you to both. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the third case of the day, Dole versus Chandler et al. Mr. Mills.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Alan Mills, representing Mr. Dole. Our contention is this is a simple case. The basic facts here are undisputed. It is undisputed that Mr. Dole gave a grievance to the guard. It's undisputed that after that, what happened to that grievance is completely beyond his control. While not in the record, my understanding from conversations with counsel is they also agree that he filled out the proper paperwork to have that submitted in the mail to go to the review board in Springfield. It's undisputed that that's the only step that the regulations require of Mr. Dole. It's also undisputed that the Administrative Review Board, at least that Mr. Dole never received a ruling from the Administrative Review Board. There's also evidence in the record that a full inquiry into his allegations were made in this case, not only by the Internal Affairs, but also by the State Police, and that those allegations were found to be credible, and that disciplinary action was taken against several of the defendants. So, and it was based on that evidence, the district court found that it was hard to believe that anything more would have been done had the ARB actually issued a ruling. Nonetheless, the district court felt itself bound by this court's ruling in Pozo to find that because there was no final ruling by the ARB, that he hadn't exhausted his administrative rulings. Our contention is that had the district court had the benefit of this court's later ruling, and I can never pronounce it, Brengetze, which was issued in September while the district court ruled back in February, make it clear, certainly in combination with the Lewis case and the Strong case, that a prison official's failure to rule or losing, in this case, the grievance, does not defeat his attempt to exhaust his administrative remedies. And frankly, it wouldn't have made any difference. As the district court itself found and defendants have not challenged, nothing more would have been done had they ultimately ruled on it, or at least there's no evidence that they would have. They never suggested that they would have.
So whatever it would be in the way of complete relief, if it had reached the board, has in your view, Mr. Mills, has occurred?
Yeah. I mean, they took disciplinary action against the people, the high-level officials who allegedly beat my client up. They couldn't and didn't award him any money, which is what he's seeking in this case, but they had no power to do so. Presumably, they took whatever disciplinary action they took based on the hearings and the due process that those officials had, rather than just on my client's allegations. He wasn't ever called to testify at any kind of disciplinary hearing, but obviously he brought the complaint to their attention. He was interviewed. He gave detailed interviews under oath to both the Internal Affairs and State Police.
So if there were a hearing held today, he would advance nothing more than you feel has already been viewed by the board in its internal investigation?
Correct. Clearly. I mean, he gave a full statement. The pictures of his injuries were on record. They interviewed, as far as I can tell, every witness who saw this or had any knowledge of this. Everybody from the nurses that were there to the prisoners on the yard were interviewed. So, and frankly, it makes my job a lot easier. I don't have to do a lot of discovery in this case. The state did it all for me. I haven't taken any depositions and probably won't take any depositions because I have statements under oath from everybody as to what happened. So I'm not sure we need anything more for trial, let alone for an administrative hearing as to disciplinary, and certainly not for a disciplinary a grievance that was filed. And frankly, they don't usually give hearings at all. They certainly don't hold trials off sometimes, but by no means usually is the prisoner himself allowed to be interviewed face-to-face by a member of the Administrative Review Board, but he never calls witnesses, never submits that sort of evidence. So they had far more, the department as a whole, had far more than they ever would have in a typical grievance hearing.
So would it be your view that if the circuit's approach is viewed as strict compliance, that this wouldn't be in derogation of that in any way because the facts of this case, with the ARB having gone through its investigation, would satisfy any strict compliance approach?
I have to take that question apart. No, the ARB did not do the investigation.
No, the department did the investigation, not the ARB. You're quite right.
And
I mean, if the ARB were to replicate the
investigation. Or do less. But our contention is actually simpler than that, that it doesn't matter, even without all of that investigation, he satisfies strict compliance. He took every step that was required of him by the regulations. This is a sort of odd grievance because the only thing it had to do was submit it to the highest level. It skipped all the low level because he was at a different prison than where it occurred. So he had only one thing that the regulations required of him, which is to send a grievance to the Administrative Review Board. He did that using the only method that defendants gave him, using the only agents they gave him to send it to him. He did absolutely everything the regulations required. And what this court held in Strong and reemphasized in Brengetze is that that's all he had to do. He didn't have to guess, well, maybe it would have been nice if I did something that the regulations don't require. Reading now the defendant's brief, it's very nice. I certainly would advise him in hindsight that he should have filed a second grievance. But the regulations clearly didn't require that. And unlike in the Cannon case and several others that they cite, the Administrative Review Board, when it told him he didn't have a grievance, didn't write back and say, you should file again. That was the problem in the Cannon case and the other cases they cite, is that the plaintiff was given specific directions and didn't follow them. He decided to jump right into court. No one ever told him anything. And he certainly had a reasonable belief that what happened here is that his grievance was destroyed because of everything that had happened. This was not just low-level guards. These were the officials that he was dealing with.
He's had prior contact with complaints with ARB, right?
I don't know that he had any before this incident. He filed a series of grievances at about the same time.
And he received notification of their being received. Is that right?
Well, not that they were received, no. He only got rulings.
That they were handled.
Well, he got rulings on two.
Rulings, yeah.
And no rulings on two. And that's when he inquired.
And it's just that he didn't get a ruling on this one at all.
Correct.
State's position appears to be that with the absence of the ruling, he should have made further inquiry.
Well, he did make further inquiry. He asked them what happened to it, and that's when they said, we don't have it. And that's when he turned to
Now, the Illinois court. System has no receipt system?
Correct. And that would be very simple. That would be a solution to this whole problem. And I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I will sit down and wait for questions.
Ms. Welsh?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm here on behalf of the defendant employees of the Department of Correction. Counsel and I agree that this is a simple case, but I don't think we agree on why it is. The PLRA requires that an inmate must take whatever is available to him to resolve his grievance to his satisfaction. And what was available to the plaintiff here was an untimely grievance. He chose not to use that available mechanism for resolving this dispute.
Now, how is he informed of that? How is any inmate informed of the untimely? Where is that to be found? I mean,
My understanding is that it's just the way that they learn about the grievance procedure itself. It's in a handbook that they get when they come to the prison.
So is it your view that Mr. Dole should have, at some point, felt that enough time had passed and hadn't gotten a response that he should have triggered another action by seeking to make further inquiry?
Well, I don't want to hypothesize about what he might have done if certain things had happened. What did happen here was that he discovered that for whatever reason, lost, stolen, misplaced by the mail, by a guard, by who knows who, as he says in his affidavit, I don't know how this happened. All I know is that they told me they don't have a record of it. So then what an inmate is supposed to do, and this is really, I think, the lesson from McCoy, is that if you're faced with a situation, if you have a grievance, a grievable situation, then you have to look and see what's available to you. And what was available to the plaintiff in McCoy, for example, was the was an untimely grievance, even though the PLRA had come into effect after the grievance period had ended. No one told him that, oh, now that the PLRA is here, you should have to, you may file an untimely grievance. That's understood because
if
it's
that would have been denied. If a second grievance would have been filed after you hadn't heard on the first one, and it would have been denied as untimely, would that satisfy exhaustion?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it would. Oh. Because, yes, I think, and that would make it
so.
Just like, well, I mean, the thing is, it would depend, let me step back. It would depend on the reason that it was denied. If, for example, he said, he put in a grievance and he said, look, I sent this grievance on April 19th. Here's a copy of it that I'm doing by hand because just like my original grievance, you know, that I got back from the counselor, I'm copying it by hand and I'm sending it to you, ARB. If he had copied it out again and sent it as untimely, generally speaking, the ARB grants those. I mean, the ARB does not, you know, cut everybody off. Look at the plaintiff in Ricardo. His grievance was, I think, almost a year late. And yet the ARB looked at it on the news.
Granting it is one thing. You said, but I asked you if they would deny the second grievance as untimely. Would that satisfy exhaustion? You said it would.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would that satisfy exhaustion? No, because it would be untimely.
All right, then.
Now what could happen is, I mean, he could come to court and he could say, no, I satisfied, I did everything that was available to me. And this court could say, yes, you did everything that was available to you. But again, that just is not likely to happen. I mean, what happens, this happens, as you can imagine, not infrequently. There are thousands of complaints, grievances that go to the ARB.
Typically... I know that, and I know we don't want a system where you can simply say, I sent this in, and nobody did anything, so I've exhausted.
Right.
But here, if the purpose of exhaustion is to give the state a fair notice of a claim and an opportunity to investigate it, states certainly had all that here in spades, didn't they?
Well, that's I mean, yes, and that's one
major investigation.
Correct.
This guy's, I mean, he did a bad thing. He smacks a warden, and then he goes to, and he claims that they were beat up as a result of it.
Right.
And they had a big investigation about it. So you found out everything.
Well, we have to go back to the grievance then. And look, he wasn't just saying I was beaten up. He also said, I want to get out of TAMS. I want to have no discipline for what I did because I didn't really do it. And I want $1 million. Now, if he had just said, I want $1 million, even though there had been this investigation, you know, we know from Booth, we know from Porter, he would have to go all the way through every step available to him. And this case is no different. And it's just, and I think Bringenzi is a very good example of this. Now, in Bringenzi, the inmate didn't get a response. This is at Cook County. Someone said to him, you know, sometimes things get lost, and or, you know, stolen, destroyed, whatever. So he looked, saw what he did, took the initiative, filed another grievance. In fact, filed multiple grievances. And it was because he did what was available, everything that was available to him, and the lack of response. Now, in Bringenzi, there was no response. It's not that the grievances disappeared or were lost. There's nothing in the opinion that indicates that. It's just that he never got a response. And if you don't get a response, this court has said we can't, you know, the prison officials can't use indefinite delay to exploit the grievance exhaustion requirement. So Bringenzi is the perfect example of an inmate doing a prisoner doing what's available to him, trying to comply with doing what is available, trying to comply with the exhaustion requirement, and for a reason that appears to be, and if the prison, the prison officials, jail officials, do not do their job in responding to a grievance, then an inmate has done everything he can do.
Could Mr. Dole, if he's aware of this other investigation, presume that the receipt was had by the ARB?
I don't think so. I mean, no, because this was, I mean, I think whenever there's a, my understanding is that investigation was started by a staff member.
Yes.
Right. And so, no, I don't think he could presume that at all. And certainly, even if he could presume that initially, once he knew that the ARB, which isn't really responsible for discipline, he knew that the ARB had no record of his grievance, then again, he had to look like the guy in Brengetzi and say, is there anything available to me? And that's what this court has to do, too.
Could he do that today?
I'm sorry?
Could Mr. Dole do that today? Could he seek a renewed complaint with the ARB?
Well, you can always file an untimely grievance.
So
I mean, that's...
If he did that and it was found untimely, would we be entertaining this this lawsuit again?
Well, I think in that case...
successful in your position today?
I think if he did refile today, as opposed to as soon as he discovered that there was no record of his, he was told that there was no record of his grievance by the ARB, then, you know, that makes it different from Judge Evans' question, which was, what would happen if he had refiled timely, said, it seemed, you know, I was just told, here's the thing, you know, here's my mail voucher, here's the grievance officer's counselor telling me I had to send it to the ARB, here's the thing from the ARB telling me there's no record. I mean, it would have gone forward. But because he didn't, he, in effect, abandoned his claim because inmates, I mean, this is what the PLRA says. If it's available, I mean, in effect, if it's available, you have to do it. You know, we make everything available. We don't require, you know, the Departments of Corrections don't require an inmate to do anything. The PLRA requires them to do everything that's available to them. Now, so, and because there, and because there's, this is really just like McCoy in that there was something available to the inmate. He wasn't instructed what to do, but it was available through the regulations. Because the inmate in Brengetzi did what was available, I mean, what these cases say, they're all about availability. Plaintiff says, I wasn't required to do that by the Department of Corrections regulations. And the Department of Corrections regulations, again, don't require anything in and of themselves. They offer opportunity, and it's the opportunity that plaintiff didn't take that the PLRA required him to take. If there are no further questions,
Thanks.
We ask that the court affirm. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mills?
First of all, McCoy is not like this case at all. What McCoy says, in McCoy, he simply ignored the grievance process entirely. It was before the Prison Litigation Reform Act, but he completely ignored a process that was clearly there. And what this court said was, well, he should have, after the PLRA came out, filed a grievance and see if they'd accept it based on the fact that the law had changed. Mr. Dole didn't ignore the process at all. He fully participated in it. He mailed it off. He handed it to their agents and said, send this to the ARB. He did what he was supposed to do. Counsel just stated during her argument that if prison officials don't do what they are supposed to do, then plaintiff has done everything required of him by the PLRA. And that's what happened in this case. It may not, we don't know where things went wrong. And frankly, that's because I wasn't given discovery and they didn't put the evidence in. And that's the point that they're ignoring in this case, is they had the burden on this point. They had the burden, not us. They had to prove that he hadn't exhausted. It's an affirmative defense. I asked for that material as to what logs were kept, what to try to trace it through. They refused to answer, and the district court refused to make them do so before entering summary judgment against me. So he didn't ignore the process. For all we know, it arrived at the ARB. They looked at it, and they tore it up and threw it in the trash can. As far as we know from this record, that's what happened, because they didn't put in the evidence as to what happened. The only evidence we have from them is that somebody several years later looked in one file and didn't find it. That's the only evidence we have. We don't even know who looked. It just says someone looked. That's the only evidence in this case that they submitted. It's our contention that he did everything he was supposed to do. Their position is because, in retrospect, he couldn't divine that the regulations said that he should file a second grievance, that he should be forever foreclosed from bringing claims that they themselves have found were credible. The regulation does not say you should file a second grievance. It doesn't say you can file a second grievance. What the regulation says is, if you're late and you have a good reason for being late, then we might accept it.
Well, you have a good reason for being late.
We weren't late.
No, well, I mean, if
We weren't late. We filed it. They admitted we filed it. So that regulation doesn't apply at all. It doesn't say anything about a second grievance. It says if your grievance is late. Our grievance wasn't late. He was on time. They lost it. It doesn't say what we're supposed to do when they lose it. There's no question here. They lost it or destroyed it.
Their acknowledgement on time, did that come as a result? You say there's no discovery, Mr. Mills. When is this just an acknowledgement in pleadings that it was on time? I mean, the acknowledgement of the receipt and all that.
It was my conversation. Not a receipt. I'm sorry. Let me be very...
There's nothing in the record here, but his position is he handed it to a guard?
Correct.
On, I guess, a date certain?
Yes.
Okay. And the state has accepted?
Has never challenged that. Never. No log, no... They didn't have a guard say, I never got it. No guard who was on duty that day said, I didn't get it. No log saying it didn't come in. No mailing log that they keep saying postage wasn't paid on that day. None of that. So for purposes of this record, it's acknowledged that he handed it to that guard. It's undisputed. They handed it to a guard, and after that, and it's also undisputed that after that, Mr. Dole had absolutely no control over what happened to it. It was entirely in the hands of them or their agents. Maybe it was the post office. They think it was the post office, and I tend to think that's what usually happens is they give it to the post office. But again, that's their choice, not my client's.
Let me ask you, you mentioned that Illinois doesn't have a system of receipts. Does it have a system which permits, as best you know, when a copying, I understand this is, he hand copied it again. Is there a facility for them to actually copy the one that's handed, you know, create a copy of the original?
I
can ask Ms. Wells if she's aware of that.
Well, I mean, I know what happens. I mean, at TAMS in particular, that is entirely dependent. Again, you never leave your cell at TAMS, so dependent on somebody else. Sometimes the library has made those copies, sometimes not. I know in our office, we get hundreds of copies saying they refuse to give it to me. Will you make me a copy and send it back to me at my office? Prisoners do that all the time because they won't make them copies and say, I want to have a copy of it, and sometimes we do it, and sometimes we say, just handwrite it. He chose to handwrite it. But they have no access to a copier. Sometimes they can find a guard or a library person who will copy it. Sometimes they can't.
Ms. Wells, I just want to add, is that your understanding of the practice, too?
It is.
Yeah. Well, anywhere in the system, if you know.
Because
no, I understand it's a unique institution.
And so my understanding is that I think pretty much mirrors what Mr. Mills says, is that the inmates, there is a copier in the law library, they can use it there, they can go to the law library, perhaps they can use other things, you know, mechanisms, friends, lawyers, whatever. But again, it just as Mr., you know, just as the plaintiff here hand copied his original complaint, his original grievance, he could have
hand-copied
a second one.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.